Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Crimelanders, thank you so much for choosing us again today. If you want to support the podcast, you can head over to headstuffpodcast.com, where for £5 a month you can avail of an extra episode, and there's quite a bit of bonus content up there if you do want to check it out. The link is in the show notes. Bit of a trigger warning that this is a really sad one today. They're always sad, but this is particularly sad. Few sources I used for this one. I used Murderpedia. I also used Evan O'Neill's YouTube video, and I used an article from The Guardian by Ali Fogg as well. We always strive to discuss the topics in a human and empathetic way, and absolutely no disrespect is meant to anyone discussed in this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy.
Welcome to Crimeland. My name's Julie J, and this week I'm chatting to our old buddy, old pal,
Sophie Shanley again.
Sophie Shani again, we absolutely love you, Sophie, about the death of Tia Sharp. I don't know if you remember this one, Sophie. It's a sad one now. I just want to note that at the top, they're all sad, but this one is particularly sad.
It does ring a bell.
I think as I read through it, some of the details are going to come back to you. Will I dive right in?
Go on. Yeah.
Tia Sharp was born to her mother, Natalie, on the 30th of June in the year 2000 in Croydon, when Natalie was still a teenager, and Natalie, in turn, was very close to Christine, her grandmother. Tia, Natalie and Christine were all very close and great friends. They were kind of like the Three Musketeers. They were just a very close little trio.
Total baby, though, like the year 2000.
Oh, what you would have been very young in the year 2000.
No, there's not that many years between us, Julie, at all.
But I always think there is, because no. I don't want to objectify Sophie here, but I just want to say the visual that I am looking at now. Look at that face. I'm doing the maths on it. I would have been 16 going on 16 going on 17. There you go. So that's a big, like, if I had been hanging out with you, people would have been like, what is going on there?
Is Julie okay?
And I would have been in fifth
What's
year.
What's she
and I was
getting
like,
out of that?
I would have been in fifth year and my mates would have been like, why is she hanging around with the first year?
You know, I actually did have a friend like that at one time.
Did you? I would have been saying to you, yeah, if I were you, I'd pick art. That's what I'd do. Like, yeah, just imparting my wisdom onto first year.
Yeah.
So maybe we would have been mates. I don't know. But I think it's unlikely in the year 2000.
You would have been getting up to, like, I was a real timid kind of a 13-year-old. I was like, still sneakily, like, playing with dolls and stuff.
Do you know, I was like that too. I was quite childish in first year. And then I just went from one extreme to the next.
That's exactly what happened to me. Like, I think when I was like 16, I was like, okay, I'm going to start drinking now. And everybody was like hardened, well used to it drinkers. And I was like,
I do look back and I wish I just had like a smoother transition. I do feel like I went from baby to just like nightmarish teen. Tia was a real extrovert. She loved to sing, dance, and had a really vibrant personality. She had a lot of friends, was a very happy young lady, very outgoing. Now, she was very good in school, But her attendance wasn't great. In 2008, social services actually got involved when her family, basically the school became aware that Tia's mother and her partner were smoking cannabis in the home. The social services came.
Tia's like cool mom had her boyfriend in and they were puffing the wacky stuff.
They were on the wacky tobacco. So Natalie and her partner were smoking the wacky tobacco. Social services came along. They did a house call. But in the report at the time, it was a strange one because, and of course, this then would not reflect well on social services later on. So they said that the family were dysfunctional, but they felt that there was no evidence of abuse. So therefore, there was no further investigation done. So they did. They said that they found the relationship, that the family itself, dysfunctional was the word they used, but that there was nothing abusive going on.
Okay, well, like, what does that mean? Just that, they were a bit messy. Tia was being well cared for-ish.
Well, you see, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I feel like it raises more questions than answers. Like, are they saying there, what I would take from that in layman's terms, are they kind of saying that the family were a bit odd, but that they could, that they felt that there was nothing untoward going on, but just that they were a bit odd. But I don't know. I don't know. That's just me purely speculating.
I'm trying to like make you give me answers that you don't have.
And did they say, what do you think? What would you take from that? So in 2002, Natalie, Tia's mom, began seeing an older guy called Stuart Hazel. It was essentially just a fling, which didn't last. And Stuart, are you ready for this? Oh. Actually ended up going out with her mother, Christine. Now, okay, obviously this is not ideal, but Natalie actually wasn't too bothered about this situation because her relationship with Stuart had been so casual. So she actually wasn't that put out that this guy was now going out with her mother. Christine and Stuart appeared to be a very strong couple and their relationship was accepted by the extended family despite this really unusual backstory.
Well, like, hold on, because that would be like ringing so many alarm bells for me with regard to Stuart, because that's fucking weird. Like,
It is weird. Yeah.
No.
Now I can see, it doesn't surprise me that some men would get off on that, but I totally agree. I think it's a serious red flag situation.
Yeah, it's definitely some kind of genre on Pornhub, but like, no, absolutely not. Not in the real world. Stuart, not in the real world. Have it in your head. Don't act it out.
Dare I say, you might say it's a bit dysfunctional. Just ever so slightly. If I was a professional.
Call me crazy, Julie, but I would say that's ever so slightly dysfunctional. poor Tia, poor Natalie, poor mummy. Stuart, you should leave. It's not okay.
It's not great. Not great. So Tia was always very close to her granny, Christine, and Stuart, who she referred to as granddad. So she looked at this guy as her granddad. After a while, Tia's mother, Natalie, had two more little boys. And so the house was obviously a lot busier. There were a few kids running around. And because of that, Tia started to spend a lot of time in her grandparents' home. Christine, the granny, spent a lot of time working nights. So it was often just Stuart and Tia in her home. They were extremely close and would spend time chatting, watching TV and playing computer games together. Tia was very close to Stuart, and in August 2012, she texted her grandparents asking if she could stay in her granny's house for a couple of days. And Stuart replied to her mother, Natalie, telling Natalie that that was no problem. Tia was really excited to go and stay in her grandparents and got ready to go on the following day, which was the 2nd of August 2012. So it would have been the school holidays.
She's only 12
at this stage. She was 12.
No.
So Stuart picked Tia up from the tram and himself and Tia went shopping for, went shopping to get some food for the couple of days that she was going to be staying with them. That evening, Christine called them from work, just checking in on them, and everything was good. Stuart told her that the night was going well and she could hear Tia laughing in the background. On the 3rd of August, Christine returned home from her night shift and Stuart told her that Tia had gone into Croydon to meet friends and buy shoes. By the evening, she hadn't returned home and Christine contacted Natalie, who told Christine that she hadn't heard from Tia either. Now, They were both instantly concerned because this really wasn't like her. And such was their worry that they actually met up and they drove around the area together to see could they find her.
So Christine has no inkling that there's anything untoward going on. She's not feeling suspicious about Stuart at all. She's
absolutely
just worried.
Not. Okay. Yeah. No, so at this stage, you know, they have been told that she's gone into town buying shoes and they're just wondering where she is. So by nighttime, by 10 o'clock, they still hadn't found Tia. And this is when they really start to panic and they call the police. And then after they call the police, they go down to the station. Now, Stuart was the last person to see Tia. He was the one, obviously, who provided the most pertinent information. He had said that they had just been hanging out in the morning and the last time he saw her was around 12. A neighbour called David also said that he'd seen Tia leave her grandparents' home at about 12 that day. Tia's phone was found and Stuart and Christine's home was searched, which police noted was so they noted it was strange when they found the phone when Stuart and Christine's home was searched, because obviously, you know, her being a young teenager,
why would she leave without it?
Yeah, she wouldn't leave without her phone, most people would think, but they did consider the possibility that she had just forgotten it. Quickly, the community got involved and they were determined to help the Sharps with posters, t-shirts and a huge search campaign getting underway immediately. There were 55 sightings of Tia. There were 55 sightings of Tia reported in the first few days of her disappearance, but none of these leads led to the discovery of Tia. So police went obviously straight for the CCTV. Now, bizarrely, absolutely no recording was found of Tia at any shops, on trams, buses or the street. The last visual of Tia was her getting off a tram and meeting her granddad a couple of days previous. She had not been recorded on any CCTV since, which again, police noted as very strange.
Very strange. And and like when they investigated all the various sightings of her, like
they were basically false sightings. So nothing was leading to Tia. So at this stage,
I don't understand these folks.
I know. But then I guess people mean well though, Sophie, do they? Like if there's somebody who even slightly resembles the person's name, maybe you would be phoning it in.
Yeah, I suppose. But at the same time, like for the family and stuff, would that not be just so crushing?
It's really tough. Yeah. Especially when there were so many, like 55.
Yeah. Shit. Okay.
But they felt at that stage, I suppose they were investigating all angles, but they felt at that stage that none of the sightings could be legitimized as Tia. So it was still very much an open investigation. Okay. They did believe that Tia left the house at midday, as this is what both Stuart and the neighbor David had said. In saying that, the police did feel also the need to explore the grandparents' house to ascertain whether or not they're could be anything that would lead them to Tia. They searched the house with sniffer dogs, but again, this turned up absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, people were naturally looking at the family and questioning whether something could have happened to Tia closer to home. Stuart in particular became a person of interest, so much so that he arranged to go on TV and be interviewed in a bid to clear his name and convince people he had absolutely no involvement in Tia's disappearance. So on the 9th of August, he appeared on ITV News and defended himself and begged for Tia's safe return. Police proceeded to get in some body language experts to analyse the interview. And because his body language, he was like really animated. It just didn't sit right with investigators. Mm. They felt he was very exaggerated and maybe was being overly dramatic. So they just felt, especially because he was kind of bordering on rambling as well, that none of it was adding up, that it just didn't really sit right with them.
Yeah, it's very interesting when you see like look, I'm not going to tar him with the brush already, but I kind of already am. Like, do you know when you see like there's that footage on the Late Late, your man who killed his wife? Do you remember him?
Oh, yes. Rachel Riley's husband, Joe Riley.
It's not adding up. And it's like when you see afterwards the Soham murders and everything, like there's something when somebody puts themselves out there, to like just protest their innocence. It's like,
it's like the lady doth protest too much.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And just, I think with this really did set alarm bells ringing, this interview, because it just, again, who's to say how any of us would behave in that situation, but it just seemed like he was behaving oddly.
Bit of theatrics going on.
Bit of theatrics. And actually, when I watched the interview back for the purposes of this Crimeland, and he's so animated, and also he's just getting really bogged down in the nitty gritty details of things that don't really matter. Yeah.
Trying to like deflect and distract. Yeah. And is he really like animated with the hands and with the
Lana hands? Okay. And just, it's very it's just strange. It's a strange watch. It really is.
Is he going on about like times, like really like, you know, meticulous?
Yeah. And he's kind of going back over stuff and a lot of just superfluous detail. And we're really kind of not focusing on the main issue here. And, you know, it is a classic symptom of, it's a classic sign that somebody is lying when they kind of offer too much detail as well, because they're just trying to convince us too much. So it's a very disconcerting interview, that's for sure. And he was also like blinking a lot, and again, that's a sign of like nervousness, and none of it was looking good. So on the morning of the 10th of August 2012, Stewart said he was going to the shop to buy the paper, and upon getting up, Christine got a really pungent smell.
No.
Yeah. So she searched high and low, but could not work out where the smell was stemming from. Forensics had been due to search the house, and when the team arrived, she told them about this smell, which she couldn't pinpoint. And
had the dogs not already been around?
Well, this is it. So the house had been searched at this stage twice. The second time they used sniffer dogs and nothing was picked up. So at this stage now, it's the 10th of August. It's over a week later. And she tells the forensics,
summertime.
Yes, summertime. No. In a small house in Croydon. And she says, I'm getting this smell. And of course, straight away, the forensics are like, okay, this does not sound good. They were pretty sure what would cause such a strong smell and evacuated the home immediately. They went up to the attic and found poor Tia's body wrapped in black bin liners. The poor girl.
Okay.
So Tia is just horrendous, absolutely awful, in the attic wrapped in black bean bags. Yeah. I know. And just like a little girl, just absolutely terrible, like just horrendous. It is just beyond comprehension.
There's just this such a level of innocence, like at that, you know.
I know.
Oh, God.
The whole thing is just appalling.
Yeah. Really,
so Tia's body was taken for postmortem, but because her body had been in the attic for nearly a week in the height of summer, as you pointed out, Sophie, it was extremely hard to identify her. So this had to be done using dental records due to the level of decomposition. On this basis, they decided not to allow her mother, Natalie, to see her. Again, due to the decomposition, they couldn't determine the cause of death, but they would later assume it to have been suffocation. The forensic team had arrived in the afternoon, and still Stewart had not returned home at that stage. So do you remember he had said that he was just going to the shop for the paper?
Nipped off to get the paper, yeah.
Yeah, still not back. So a citywide search began, and police were determined to track him down. Stewart was quickly spotted in a convenience store in central London, extremely drunk and asking people and passers-by to help him find his granddaughter.
Oh,
yeah,
nice one, Stewart, you sloppy bastard.
Yeah.
Where's so my granddaughter? Yuck.
Yeah, really, really gross. They found him. So police found him in a local park drinking a bottle of vodka and was immediately arrested on suspicion of murder. That night, Christine was also arrested but was later released due to lack of evidence linking her to the crime, and ultimately she was completely cleared of any wrongdoing.
Okay, so actually, like, did not know. Didn't
know. Well, she was never charged with anything, and there was no indication after the fact that the police had got that wrong. Like, it did appear.
So he must have got all this done while she was working, while she was...
Oh, yeah. Well, this is... So, I mean, I suppose the pieces of the puzzle would be fitted together later on, but ultimately Christine hadn't even been in the gaff when all this stuff was taking place. So she was completely cleared of any involvement.
If you're done listening to the podcast today and you fancy something a little bit more uplifting, you might head over to headstuffpodcast.com where you can check out the Happy Broadcast, which is a podcast all about positivity, keeping your energy up and just all around happy stuff, which is something I think we all need right now. Do head over to headstuffpodcast.com to check that out.
Tired of tuning into negative news? Well, get your week off to the right start with the Happy Broadcast. Let's help you focus on the positive things happening in our world. Each episode will feature positive news, some mental health tips, and we'll hear from our Happy Broadcast community about what makes them happy. The podcast is hosted by me, Amy O'Dwyer, in collaboration with Mauro Gatti and his popular social channel, The Happy Broadcast. Episodes are out every Monday, and you can listen and subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Let's help spread some positivity.
Upon returning to the house to search it again, police discovered Tia's glasses, which had been broken, and also a bag of her clothes. Stop. They also found an SD card pushed into a door frame, giving the impression that somebody had tried to hide it. They took this back to the police station for further examination. And in the meantime, Stuart's version of events had changed completely.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Had he was taking pictures of Tia.
Well, he was now saying that Tia had fallen asleep down the stairs. And because he had been on a cocktail of cannabis and alcohol, he had fallen asleep only to wake up the following morning and see Tia lying at the bottom of the stairs.
Oh my God. You know what? I hope that he was off his head on the vodka from the park when he was making up this bullshit.
Well, yeah,
it's about the stairs and the like.
It's pretty infuriating, isn't it? So he claimed that when he woke up from this drunken, stoned stupor, that he found Tia dead at the bottom of the stairs. So he insisted that instead of telling them the truth, he decided to hide her body in the attic, because, of course, that's exactly what you do. He undressed her again. Like, that's why you would you need to do that?
All first aid courses, I think, say that now. You have to strip the body immediately. Yeah. Good man.
So put the clothes and phone in a bag, and then wrapped her poor little body in bin bags and placed her body in the attic. Basically, he was saying that this had just been a terrible accident and he had just panicked. Now, obviously, the real and terrible reason for Stuart killing Tia soon became clear when the SD card the police had been examined. So they recovered a lot of images of girls, young girls, and Tia herself. And it was clear that he had some kind of attraction to Tia, so that he had essentially been taking photos of her when she wasn't looking. So she was unaware that he was taking these photos. So, for example, you know, if she was sitting in the sitting room watching TV, he was taking photos of her
and
she was completely oblivious. So really just such a violation.
So he was building up to this. He was like...
And there was another indicator as well. I mean, obviously the photos themselves like are unfortunately like painting their own story. But as well, while they're going through the camera, they did find some blood evidence at the scene, and it was a match for Tia. And then obviously they're saying to themselves, okay, so we have blood evidence, we have these photos. And then the last picture on the SD card was, they believe, taken after Tia was dead. Oh, so the camera really told the whole story. Like, there was absolutely no room for doubt here as to what had happened and ultimately what had motivated Stuart in this crime as well, because it was very obvious that he had been obsessed with Tia.
It's terrifying, isn't it? Because like, it's really kind of scary. It's like, it's opportunistic as well. Like, he was waiting for the time that he got a weekend, like, with Tia to carry
an opportunist.
This out. Like, his little head was
he
just
was an opportunist
in that way. Oh, and like, God knows how many years he'd been harboring these like feelings of wanting to do
this. Is
like
it?
This.
And because
then,
he had been in
the
her
opportunity
life,
arose. Yeah. And, oh, it's just so scary.
And because he'd been in her life for so long, and obviously this girl was so young, it's terrifying that he had been harboring these feelings for her, like this kind of obsession and this attraction to what was such a young child. Like, oh, I mean, this poor girl. It's horrendous. Yeah, it's just the worst of the worst.
Like, probably as well, like, putting in a bit of work into like their relationship so that she'd like him more, she'd want to spend more time there, she'd probably like turn a blind eye to like, you know, stuff that her mum wouldn't let her do, or like buying her the bloody expensive comics in the shop that like everyone else had. Like, you know, like that kind of thing that like,
and I mean, as you said, you like the word she used there, Sophie, was so spot on. I mean, grooming, like that's why she was obviously so excited about going and staying with Stuart, who she viewed as her granddad and all the rest, because it's building this relationship. And then obviously, as you pointed out, essentially this is he was an opportunist, that this, you know, was his opportunity to kill this child. So their belief was that obviously that the motivations have been sexual, but unbelievably, when the murder trial began, he still insisted on his innocence.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, what a prick. What an absolute prick. Yeah.
What did he say? Like, how, just, he kept flogging the stupid, stairs. The accident. Story.
Yeah. And what he was relying on was the fact, which again just seems so cruel, that he was relying on the fact that the body was so decomposed that this had worked to his benefit, because they couldn't, that they couldn't establish. But then the SD card was produced in court, and
which speaks volumes, really.
Yeah. I mean, it tells the entire story.
The build up. And then, like, the final picture, which, like, don't even want to know what that was. But they think after she was
died. She was dead. And actually, because I did read, obviously, I'm going to throw in now the sources at the top when I do my little insert, did read a few things on this. And you know what? I was like, I'm not going to go into what the picture was of, because I don't think anyone needs that. And I just was horrendous.
I can imagine.
So when the SD card was produced, obviously, people were just horrified, and Tia's mother, Natalie, actually had to leave the court, the poor thing. After a couple of days, he changed his plea to guilty. I mean, about bloody time. And in the face of overwhelming evidence, realised there was no way his story was going to stand up to cross-examination. So it is believed that Stuart killed Tia after refusing his sexual advances. So that is what the police believe led to him killing her. Stuart Hazel was sentenced to 38 years and will be 75 years of age when he is released from prison, which I think is still too young. I just think he should never get out of prison, because that is the ultimate betrayal.
Oh, it's no, he should really rot in there. Like, that's not, like, there's no room for like, it's very clear what happened here.
Oh, I mean, this is
he's a monster.
Monster. No, and it's so awful, isn't it, as well, for the mother and the grandmother. Like, it's very hard for them.
Like, it makes you wonder as well, like, was he involved with the mother initially because she had young kids? And then when that broke up, did he still want, you know, that
quite
connection
possibly
with Tia, so he went for the granny? Like, it's, I don't know.
Actually,
maybe that's
that.
Too much of a threat.
No,
a stretch,
but again, it would not surprise me at all. Actually, Sophie, I hadn't even thought of that. But you could actually be spot on there.
I don't know. Just
that it was just a mechanism that he could stay close.
It just seems so.
Well, it did allow him access. It definitely allowed him access. And I mean,
like, the man's a paedophile. Like, he doesn't.
Oh, yeah. Straight up paedophile.
He, like, it doesn't matter if he's with the mother or the granny, because really, like, that's not what he's after anyway. So,
yeah, just I mean, the camera, I mean, thank God they did find the camera, in that it essentially just it was the most incriminating piece of evidence they could possibly find, because as I said, it did tell the whole story. Very, very sad. And then on a side note, the neighbor David, do you remember David?
Oh, yeah,
who had said
that
he saw Tia leave the house at 12, he was sentenced to 5 months imprisonment for wasting police time. And it is still unclear as to what his motive was in lying.
Oh,
so they don't know why he lied.
So he could have actually been involved in this somehow.
Well, I think, I don't know. I don't know, because I actually did consider, I was like, is that why, like, was there something about them working cahoots together? But I didn't find anything to suggest that. I mean, it could maybe have been a situation where he was paid off or something. You just don't know.
Or like, I haven't seen the Stewart character. Like, you know, was he a very intimidating looking guy?
No.
Was the next-door neighbor like a
scrawny guy? Yeah, little scrawny guy. I mean, because I did think that, I was like, oh no, please don't tell me like he's implicated in this as well. But I think, as far as I can gather, they haven't ascertained what the motivation was. I don't think there is any indication that he was involved, because there's no DNA evidence to suggest that. So there was no DNA found at the scene which would suggest that somebody else was involved. It was all pointing to Stewart.
And
because he pled innocent for so long, I'd imagine he'd be more than happy to drag somebody else into the mix if they were involved. So, I mean, actually, it could have just been a straight up like that, like if somebody nips around and says, here, listen, would you mind saying this to the police? And you have not had a particularly good relationship with police, you'd probably more than happily lie for somebody.
Yeah, yeah. And that makes a lot of sense.
But it's still, it's a very, very sad case.
Oh, it's really sad.
Really awful. Just terrible. And it's one, I think, actually, if you saw the image of Tia, you would probably remember the case, because at the time it was huge. It was a very disturbing one.
With Stewart, like when he went to prison, like, have you heard anything like of how he, like, because I'm sure he's not having an easy time in there. Like, I hope that they are.
Well, I mean, you always, I mean, I think with these cases like this, you kind of always hope that, don't you?
Yeah, completely.
And he did stab another prisoner in the face a couple of years ago. Well, it wouldn't suggest he's getting out anytime soon, because he's, you know, getting into trouble in prison. And then a couple of years ago as well, a few of the Red Top papers did release, he had written some letters giving out about prison conditions to family members, and then they were released to the tabloids. And, you know, none of us pay. He's not having a good time in there, which is what we want.
That's what
so
we
that
like
is
that
is reassuring.
He's kind of
and that is the very, very sad case of Tia Sharp.
And Julie, how's her poor mom?
The mom, do you know what? I feel like the mom has had a tough time. She has had her own run-ins with the law since. Obviously, you can imagine, like, she is still suffering. She still has younger kids.
Yeah.
So she is a mom, obviously trying to be a mom to her other kids, and I would imagine it's just very hard for her. So she had a couple of incidents, but again, like that, if, you know, who can judge her for that? Because you can only imagine what she is living with every day.
Yeah, I'd say it dominates her head like 24.
Oh, and the grandmother? I mean, it's terrible for the grandmother as well.
No.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah.
But he obviously, look, he was a manipulative person. And as we've learned from watching these documentaries and all the rest, like, they don't just groom the child, they also groom the family. So you can understand how a whole family can be duped by someone.
And, you know, like, initially when you hear, you're like, oh, come on, like, this guy's clearly a creeper. But like, yeah, I know, like, they do, they put in solid hours into convincing everybody that they're likable and honest and, you know, just like general good people. So that's another terrifying thing.
Well, it is. And it's a really sad case. I mean, I was saying to myself, oh my God, is this just too sad to do? Because it is very, very sad. We might even put it up as a bonus episode, because maybe it's a bit too sad, but it's one that I think people are familiar with.
Like, even when you were going through it, like, you know, it's a familiar one.
It's a familiar one. And the reason I wanted to do it was huge when I was of a certain age. So it's one that really, really shocked us.
But she was missing for a good while. Like, I remember the constant, like,
on Sky News, there was and that's why I mentioned, like, the t-shirts and the posters and all that. The local community in Croydon, like, this was a huge campaign.
Yeah.
Like, it was non-stop coverage on the likes of Sky News. So it was a really, really sad one, but it's definitely one that made its mark on me. And it's one that I really, really do remember.
Yeah.
As just being everyone's worst fears.
Like, it's not that long ago. Like,
realized. It's not that long ago. It's only, I mean, what, 9 years ago? Not even. Eight and a bit.
8 years, yeah.
And it's one, it still feels so familiar. It's like it just happened yesterday, because the court case, when people realized what had happened, that poor little girl, it really was just everyone's worst nightmare and everyone's worst fear.
That sinking.
Come to fruition.
Like, oh God, no.
Just desperate.
Yeah.
Sophie, thank you so much. If we're looking for you, Sophie, where can we find you?
You can find me on just Instagram, Sophie Shanley.
We love Sophie Shanley's content. Sophie, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'll talk to you real soon. Mwah.
Bye. Bye.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.